future of happiness, laughing and wild, always wearing a smile. Look at you, you're a vision of loveliness, sweet kisses so warm, wrapped up in my arms. Look at me, I'm a picture of willingness, I'd go anywhere to show you I care. But by the way things seem to go, we might meet you any day. I'm trying to pretend it'll work out in the end. I'm crying, but my tears are far away. I'm crying, but my tears are far away.
You get no choice. You get no voice, just play mom, pretend you're dumb, and that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Julie come along, we set up a congregation, we will be the every night, love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer, a captor, or a baby? Remember, dear, that you're my wife. Well, as soon as Jimmy got a job, I began again. Then happy at the turret lay the year or so, and then the morning that the twins were born, Jimmy says to them, kids, your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish, right, faithful as a child. Stay at home, you got to mind the baby. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, it's something else to do. It's cook the meal, mend the socks, sweep the floor or two. I listen in with Jimmy Young, it makes me want to spew. I was gonna be an engineer. Don't I really wish that I could be a lady? I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. But I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You can buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay, you got a cook and a nurse. For better or worse, you don't need a purse when the lady is gone. Ah, but now the times are harder and the Jimmy's got the sack. I went down to Vickers, they were glad to have me back. But I'm a third class citizen, my wages tell me that. And I'm a first class engineer. The boss says to me, you ask a lady. You only got the job cause you can't afford a man. You are keep the profits highest, maybe. You're just a cheaper pair of hands. You got one fault, you're a woman. You're not worth the equal pay. A bitch of tart, you're nothing but hard. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You even go down the drain like a lady today. Well, I listen to my mother and I joined a typing pool. I listen to my lover and I put him through his school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby. As a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I'll fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
And that's Peggy Seeger from the Folkway Years. Peggy Seeger's a great folk singer and political singer. And you're listening to Bathrobes PR's Broadsides here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM in Santa Cruz. And if you ever want to call in, and I hope you call into my show for the next 2 hours, because I'm going to be here and I'm going to be on the phone available for you, give us a call at 427-FRSC. That's 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Got a couple of guests with us today, which sort of some distinguished out-of-town folks and people that you may remember from Santa Cruz's homeless history past. These are activists who played a key role at earlier points here in Santa Cruz and a key role in assuring rights for poor people and bringing important issues into the public forum and in exposing abuses that were continuing and in fact unfortunately today are still continuing but not talked about in the mainstream media and not dealt with by poverty pimps and mainstream bureaucrats. Folks with me today, we have Backyard Brian Flanagan.
Hello.
He is, you can hear him in the back there. We have a very small studio, so he's kind of crammed in the back. And then we also have George Solis. So George is an activist from Sonoma who helped put together the 4th of July Homeless Congress, Homeless Independence Day, on July 4th, 1990. George, come in here and kiss the mic and say hi.
Hi, I'm just an outside agitator, and I've come back to give you more.
Good.
Yeah, you were one of the lead figures in making sure that, well, we had, what, 100 to 200 people that came to Santa Cruz that day in the summer of July 4th, and you're kind of doing some, George is doing some updated research on that to see what's happened in the last 5 years, where the homeless movement has gone. We're going to be talking about that here in Santa Cruz, the movement for the rights of poor people. Also, other issues that are going to be coming up are the curfew, which was the main story in the Metro Santa Cruz Weekly on Wednesday, the youth curfew being proposed as a countywide measure by the Criminal Justice Council, and I think one of the supervisors is pushing it, or at least has brought that forward. Other issues are going to be the Matrix program in San Francisco, plans to sideline homeless people through more subtle means, like removing the East Bay, now called the Trans Bay Terminal, the Downtown Business Association, and how downtown business associations in different cities are actually illegally using assessment taxes to coerce other businesses into their anti-homeless programs. This is happening in Santa Cruz, Arcata, and Berkeley. And it's apparently quite a phenomenon. It's happening all over. We also had an earlier public appearance by Councilmember Mike Ratkin on Channel TV on, I guess it was Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock. And Mike made a number of false statements, rapid fire, one after another, which we didn't have any real time to expose on the TV. And hopefully, if you were listening to that program and are still interested in the follow-up, we can kind of correct some of his misstatements. And also, if you weren't, we can tell you what was happening then. We also have the a proposed vehicular camping law just hot out of the mayor's office. It actually isn't finalized, and it's still kind of a rough draft, but something that is being put forward to the police chief Steve Belcher, for his examination, and something that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and I, in a rare show of unanimity, actually support. It's a proposal that people who are homeless and in their vehicles be allowed to, with the permission of a church, sleep on church property with the permission of the church, three vehicles. It's actually a pittance, and it's like saying you're in favor of breathing at night, but there it is. Also, we've got principles on panhandling from Los Angeles. We've got the update on the NorseCon food brouhaha in San Francisco. Not much of an update, but a little update. That's my case. And we've got some other more far-flung stuff regarding drug forfeitures, court decisions around protest restrictions that various cities have put on anti-abortion protesters. And also I'd like to say we have a special salute and announcement of an upcoming memorial program for Linda the Lark Edwards, another longtime homeless activist who is in the hospital, very sick, and may soon no longer be with us. We have her old friend, Backyard Brian Flanagan, known to most of you as Brian Staley, those of you who remember him from 1989, who will be talking about her, talking about then and now. In fact, maybe that's more what the show is going to be about today. It's then and now. We're also going to have a reading, probably, from American History, Radical American History, by the Sidney Lenz book that I customarily read to you. A few humorous snippets from the Jolly Roger comedy troupe from Berkeley. And anything else we can cram in before the next person comes in and kicks us out. So, I'm going to begin by perhaps, well, the best thing to do is to make sure these guests don't freeze outside and get them interested in the show. George, let me begin with you. You're a homeless activist. Now, what is that?
Well, I just retired. So what that was just a matter of being irritated at seeing people's human rights taken away because of some economic status. And I can say I've always been quite surprised that Santa Cruz has been able to maintain its liberal
vision while being quite suppressive of its poor people.
So you're from Sonoma. Give us a quick update on Sonoma, and then if you will, compare Santa Cruz and Sonoma, Sonoma County. I guess you're from Santa Rosa.
We just passed a no sleeping in your car ordinance, and I was asked what my group, or if I had a group, what we were going to do about it, and I said we're going to do absolutely nothing, that it was such a asinine ordinance that the city would bury itself by passing it. And within a matter of weeks, there were churches doing sleep-ins in their cars outside of police stations. And since the police didn't bust them, if they did bust homeless people sleeping in their cars, well, that would be selective enforcement, and that's how we were able to let them can that law.
When did this law pass?
About 6 months ago, and it fell apart about 2 months ago.
Yet have any homeless people been convicted of or even charged with sleeping and then taken to court?
One person was, and that was dropped.
And police are no longer using it to move along homeless people?
Oh, no. They found out that it was really a hornet's nest that they had stuck their hand into, and they just want to really disregard it. The law hasn't been taken off the books, but it's laughed at.
So until this law came on the books, were police leaving folks in vehicles alone, or were they using other laws to harass them?
Well, they were asking them to move along, and you know that they don't need any laws. The police are the government after 5 o'clock at night, and they would pretty much rough people up or damage their vehicle in some way or cut off their registration sticker and then give them a ticket for not having a registration sticker. Those types of things that the police normally do to promote capitalism and keep the poor in the farm.
So actually you know of incidents where these three things happened? People being roughed up, people being finding their registration stickers cut, and then the third thing you mentioned was something else.
Oh, just giving tickets? In general, harassing people, sure. How far back do you want me to go? 200 years?
This last year. Has there been a number of cases?
Well, of course there has. I mean, it's a standard police procedure to support businesses to keep the look of poverty away from the streets.
Mm-hmm. And you know of particular cases in the last 6 months where this has happened?
Oh, sure. This is well documented of allowing gangs certain targets, such as homeless people who are camped in their cars, not following up on destroyed vehicles and that type of thing.
So you've been working not just in Sonoma, I think you worked in San Francisco for a while. You were involved with Sacramento's California Homeless and Housing Coalition for a while. A bunch of organizations, but most important, you're a man on the streets who's working for rights for people on the streets. What's, again, more on Sonoma, what else is happening up there?
Unfortunately, nothing. Someone asked me what I thought was going to happen in the next 10 years, and I said, unfortunately, nothing. I think the worst thing we could do is sit back and just let the Morlocks take over. And I noticed in Santa Cruz, one of the most disastrous things, and it came upon me yesterday, was the so-called town hosts. The hall monitors. Mm-hmm. And, they say that the business of America is business, and it shows no more than on the streets of Santa Cruz.
Right. Well, actually, that host program is an expanding cancer. It's happening in numerous cities, again, connected with the Downtown Business Association's assessment districts. They coerce merchants into funding these little wannabe cops, and I don't know what you call them, hall monitors is a good... And they run around, you know, with big grins smacked on their faces and little green uniforms. I guess in Berkeley they're in blue uniforms, and they're called the... not the hosts, it's something else. But they do the same thing. They tell panhandlers to move. They tell people who are standing outside the rain under an awning to move. This has actually happened. They inform on small drug deals involving marijuana and LSD, I presume, as well as big drug deals, or the real big drug deals, and the tobacco and alcohol stores, of course, continue to operate unmolested, strangely enough. Of course, they're legal. I suppose we should make an exception in their case. Go ahead, George.
There is a legal response when these people talk to you, and that's to tell them to fuck off.
I see. So for those of you who don't quite know the exact terminology to use when you're approached by either a police officer or a host, probably a host is better than a police officer, although you guys probably could do it similarly with a police officer, fuck off is in fact the appropriate terminology.
Right, and one of the things that I've always stressed when working with poor people or disenfranchised people is there's a statement that if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. And I think it's really important that you get to know your rights. And when in doubt, you have all the rights.
Yeah, I think that is important to remember, although it's also good to be aware of the possible consequences and to try to be prepared for them. Don't carry a bag of marijuana in your back pocket if you're engaging in high-profile confrontation or simple assertion of your rights, even with police officers, whether in Santa Cruz or in Santa Rosa or in San Francisco.
I mentioned this the other day, that all of the gains that we've made in this country have come about by breaking an existing law. This is the only way they're done. Some people call it impolite, and Gandhi won the award for the most impolite person in the world. And the gains he made were enormous. So you don't have to put up with crap. You might get arrested, but remember, the majority of laws that suppress poor people are wrong.
Indeed, this is true. And often you'll find that if you contest this, even if you are dealing with a conservative court system, even if you're dealing with a judicial system that will eventually uphold the police officer or the bureaucrat in finding you guilty, the cost and the embarrassing publicity involved in pursuing your case may, in many cases, mean that the police and the courts don't pursue the case. Particularly if it's a high-profile case, which is obviously one concerned with basic rights. Like, for instance, here in Santa Cruz, quite appropriately, in 1989, here's Brian Flanagan, then known as Brian Staley, who himself was involved in the fight for free food, the fight to be able to distribute food without harassment from the police, the right to a public picnic, it might be called, which is apparently going to be contested in Berkeley. It's already being contested in San Francisco. I'm facing a Superior Court is reviewing my 2-month conviction for serving free food in San Francisco without a permit, and that case should be back by June 10th at the latest. They're really stalling on my case, and the bottom line update on my case is there's no update except that I'm still waiting. But Brian here, Brian Flanagan, say hey, Brian.
Hello, William, if you're listening to this.
Yes, this is Brian. That's a word for Linda the Lark Edwards, who probably isn't listening to it because I don't know if she has a radio at the moment. She's really in miserable circumstances in a local convalescent home and very near death. She has liver cancer. But
might get a tape recording out of her.
Yeah, we will give her a tape recording of this show. And if you are recording the show, do let me know at 427-3772. And also please call in at any time if you have any comments on anything that we're saying. Any thoughts around these poverty issues? 427-3772, because you're listening, as you know, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM.
Robert, I want to jump in there about the knowing what your rights are and knowing what really you can get away with these days with the erosion of the Fourth Amendment right, search and seizure rights. And also knowing how to make the most of your rights. There's certain things you can do, like, you know, when you're being searched yourself, you say, well, I don't, I want you to know that I don't condone this, or I don't, how do you say
don't
it?
Consent.
I don't consent to this, and then they do what they do. There's, there's tricks to learn, so that, well, it's nice to have a witness, nice to have a tape recorder on you, nice to have a camera on you. We're getting a little upper class there, but, you know, I think it's, we gotta know what our rights are, we gotta know how to make the most of them, and I got a lot to learn, so I'm looking forward to that. I'd kind of like to talk a little bit about I haven't really been around much since 1989. I was one of the upper class homeless. I had a vehicle, and Linda Edwards, she also has she had a vehicle for a long time, and
let me give a little bit of the background of you and Linda. So for those of you who aren't aware of her and of you, Brian, in 1989, Calamity Jane Immler and others, including myself, Brian Koepke, Rocky Stone, Sandy Loringer, began a protest at the town clock involving a cup of soup to homeless people at night in protest against violence against homeless people, and police abuse. In response, Mayor Marty Wormhout ordered us to be arrested for serving people food at the town clock because they claimed we did not have a permit. We attempted to get a permit and were turned down, told that you needed an institutional restaurant kitchen to cook food and serve it to people in public, which of course is preposterous unless you're selling it, but that didn't stop them. They had mass arrests in early January and began jailing people regularly for serving free food, confiscating the food, setting up police barricades so people could not get to the food. And this was at a time when there was no free meal. Today there is a free meal at River Street every day at 4, and there's also a Food Not Bombs meal almost every day, which is independently of that, and which has also been harassed. But there was no food for homeless people during the evening during that period of time. Brian came to town and began to actively help us in fighting this police institutional bureaucratic abuse, where they were simply, they didn't like having homeless people downtown. They wanted us away from the town clock. They wanted us in the bushes. They wanted us not to be pushing our case. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, let's see. I'm looking here. The number for Food Not Bombs, if you're listening to this and you need a meal and want to know when and where they are, it's 425-3345. My situation was I was actually thinking about going to UC Santa Cruz. I had been there before as a student, and I was transferring from Midwestern State University in Texas, and I got a great scholarship, but I would have had to borrow a lot of money to go to school, so I thought I'd just kick back in town and check out the social scene. And I started living with my old roommate, actually, from UC Santa Cruz, and Devin Jarrett, and things weren't going good at his house. I realized later that, you know, they had a pretty serious drug problem, but I didn't know at the time. And I started eating outside. I had a job working at the Cabrillo college cafeteria, stocking the shelves. And they had this great meal at the River Street shelter. I forget these guys that were doing it.
Felix Freund on the street kitchen.
Okay, and it was great. Man, we had a fire going there. It was cold. It was on Christmas time. This was like Christmas of '88. And
let me interrupt you. The reason they had that meal there, and it was a meal that went on for 1 month throughout December, was because the mayor wanted to get us away from the town clock at Christmas. So she entered into a deal with us that if we left the town clock, the city would fund a meal for a month near the River Street shelter. And we said, that's fine. If you provide hot food to people, then that's great. And for a month, they provided that meal, but on January 2nd, 1989, they stopped. And so we resumed our food serving.
Yeah, I went down to Los Angeles. It was my mom's... No, it was Christmas. I went down to check out Christmas, I guess. My family there, and my brothers and sisters and stuff, and things did not go good in Los Angeles with my brothers and sisters. And I came back to Santa Cruz, and then the old meal was gone, and I was disappointed. They were serving some food at the town clock, though, so I go, well, that's cool. It's not quite the, you know, the environment with the trees and stuff over by the River Street, but... yeah, so that's when Robert Norris here, and is that what you're calling yourself now? And I go, he says, well, hey, you want to help, serve food here? There's a possibility you might get arrested. I go, right? He goes, yeah, it's sort of against the law around here. I'll do that, So I was recruited by Robert, actually, and then when we did get, the cops did come down on us, I go, fuck this shit, this is right on. So, I got arrested, and a lot of people got arrested, and And I should have, in my trial, like, I got a jury trial, and I should have, like, you know, spoken up, but I didn't say nothing. I thought I was going to be like, I didn't want to take advantage. I was very egotistical, but, well, I just come, you know, I've just been to college in the Midwestern State and pre-med and then playing football, and I just didn't want to take advantage of my, you know, European-American privilege status. And they go, well, wait, you know, anybody should be able to, like, do this, you know. So I just didn't say anything, and they convict me, you know, 30-day jail sentence.
Brian was actually the first person convicted of serving free food that I have ever heard of under the jury trial. He was convicted in February of 1989, and then 5 months later, Sandra Loringer was also convicted after a jury trial serving free food.
Yeah, and I was really into nonviolence at the time, you know. Since then, I bought one of these stun guns. It only cost like $40. And, you know, if a cop is harassing you, there's some respectful police out there, and there's some very disrespectful police. And if you get approach a police person from the rear, and, you know, they're really giving you a hard time or something, you give them one of these shots with a stun gun, I don't think they're going to be able to turn around after about 5 seconds. You know, right away, they just kind of freeze, and after 5 seconds, they're just laying on the ground. And then they just stay in this, like, kind of coma state for about 5 minutes, and you can get away.
Have you actually used a stun gun on a police officer, although
no.
You'd be incriminating yourself here if you said this or not?
I certainly hope I never have the need to, but I do find it's reassuring. Also, sleeping out in the wild, where I'm sleeping lately is got some mountain lions going around there, so that also helps me feel a little better about myself. But anyway, here we are. I did some other civil disobedience stuff, but eventually, you know, I just kind of got, the last time I had it, the last 12 days, they divided my jail sentence, my 30-day jail sentence up twice, and into two parts. In the second part, I was in there, and I was depressed, I didn't have my antidepressant medication. Since then, I got on Social Security they gave me like 7 years back pay. I ended up going back to San Francisco where I can get on GA. Couldn't get on GA here. And I continued working on my Social Security case, and I finally won it. Now I'm fairly rich.
Well, that's good. All you folks sent in your fun solicitations here to the radio. I guess the point I was trying to make here was we're talking, of course, about how to deal with abuse from police officers or even standard contacts. I mean, I certainly, if I see a police officer investigating a crime that is such as an assault or something else, I'm usually quite cooperative in those situations, and I have congenial relations with cops on the beat. I don't see any reason not to be congenial with people. But I think it is quite appropriate to be aware that if you're a poor person, you're facing a stacked system here, and you have to be very, very careful what you're doing. At the same time, you can't allow that apprehension and that attitude of care to subvert and corrupt your natural spontaneity, your desire to be yourself, the natural joy of life that all of us are entitled to, and that so many of us so few of us are able to express in everyday life.
Well, it's really a bummer when you're out sleeping somewhere and you come across an enforcement officer. And it's just you and them, and it's usually young white male, it seems like, around here a lot. But I did see an African-American police officer in Santa Cruz. I was impressed.
Robocop.
Anyway, he was driving a police car.
You know, his name is Officer Perry. I think if you're thinking of the same officer, he's unfortunately...
There's only one, I take it.
I think there may be more than one, but he's the one I see most frequently. He's, again, as an individual, a congenial... possibly to be congenial with the officer. He actually has purchased a street shit sheet, my homeless newsletter at one time.
But
in terms of his willingness to give tickets, to harass people, I've been receiving reports that he's been instrumental in going after deadheads with music on the mall and things of this sort. So the color really doesn't matter, and although it would be nice to say that there was a fair proportion of people of that color on the force, which there isn't, really.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's a real bummer, especially when you know this police officer, and they've harassed you before, and now there's nobody around except you and them, and I know Linda's been in that situation, living in her car. I was down there by the lighthouse, across the street from this huge open field, you know, and I got harassed by the police. They gave me a camping ticket, and I thought that was pretty rude. But anyway, at least they didn't harass me. But I have been harassed by police officers. And since then, I've taken some martial arts stuff, and I feel a little bit better about myself in that situation. Been doing this capoeira stuff and trying to stay in shape. And, you know, it just helps your old self-esteem. Of course, having some money helps, too. But anyway, about Linda, she actually ran for a city council position, and she gave this great speech. This was like...
We're talking about Linda Edwards, Linda the Lark Edwards, who is a longtime homeless activist, arrested numerous times for supporting the rights of homeless people to sleep outside, to serve free food, to speak without fear at city council.
Yeah, and if people have stories about Linda, I want to do this kind of like a memorial, you know, and memory while she's still alive would be great, you know. I mean, I don't want to be negative about you listening to this, Linda, but, you know, I love you, and there's a lot of people out there that love you. Can they call 423 Health?
Sure.
With any stories with Linda, is it okay to talk about her situation right now, her medical situation a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't know much about it, but I think it's liver cancer.
Yeah.
So if people, it's not because she was drinking either. She wasn't a drinker. But people know anything about that, or, you know, have such, anything that could be interesting. I'd like to have a lot of information here. I want to get a copy of that speech that she gave, because it was great. Play that on the station. I don't know, maybe Sunday, but who knows? We don't really know when we're going to be able to do that.
No, but I mean, if you do have information, if you want to contribute to the show commemorating Linda the Lark Edwards, give me a call at 423-4833, which is my number for the next week, and it's also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And if you have any comments about the show now, or you want to talk to Brian, George Solis, or to me, give a call to 427-3772. That's Radio Free Radio Santa Cruz. Here, coming over your radio, coming at you.
Hey, let's talk about the Bag Ladies Revolt.
I'd like to do that at some point, but that's 1988. I guess we can do that. What I want to do is we have another man in the studio who you heard earlier, George Solis, the Northern California homeless activist. And I'm kind of interested in giving our audience a sense of what's the difference between then and now. Is there any difference? Have things gotten worse? Have they gotten better? What lessons can activist organizers draw, what can we learn so that we can organize more effectively, so that the next demonstrations that we do are more to the point, have more impact on the public and on the government officials and on the policies, such as here in Santa Cruz, the major policies that I've seen are the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, make it illegal to ask for spare change after dark, make it illegal to have a homeless demonstration at night involving any kind of a structure. Do you have any sense what that's all about?
Well, to answer the first part of that, what's happened between, say, then, well, 1990, when we had the first homeless Congress here, and now, is that the people, some of the people that were involved, let's say the middle class people that were involved at the time, have now gotten really good jobs with fine salaries. You know, good for them. But as far as the status of the poor, they've remained the poor. They haven't made any great gains. I'm glad to see that there is now a tent city, or whatever you want to call it. At least people are recognizing the problem. One of the great things we face is denial. It's the same thing that happens in abusive households, and it's happening in society. And it's the job of the activist to bring the problem to the fore, to bring it forward. But I would suggest something that we did in 1967 when I was with the Diggers, and that is more street theater, more a cartoonish atmosphere. These town hosts, for instance, you could have the town clown follow them around with the town clown sign on the back of your green jacket, but with the clown head and the nose. I think that would quickly end. When Gorlam is running tours of the Haight-Ashbury, showing the tourists all the freaks sitting on the street, we got a long mirror out of the psychedelic shop and followed the Go Line bus, holding the mirror up to the bus window so all the tourists could see was their own faces looking out of the glass. The tours ended in about 2 weeks. It's that type of street theater. Sal Alinsky's fighting at the Rochester Symphony while they were protesting Kodak's hiring practices, their exclusion of black employees, changed a lot, more than picket lines could. So I think we need to look for a little bit more humor, which will draw more sympathy, but in fact be more poignant.
Yeah, and I'm always eager to see new approaches. I get real tired of endless pickets and endless petitions and endless visits to city council that go nowhere. Even in 1988, we presented a petition with literally thousands of signatures asking the city council simply to put in place a new policy that would make it police practice only to give a ticket to a person sleeping in a vehicle after a complaint. Very minor change, even smaller than the change that is being proposed by the city council now, that there be three vehicles that will be allowed to park in a church parking lot. The city council ignored it completely. We didn't hear a word about that petition. They didn't even ask us a question when we presented these thousands of signatures, and it was just a complete slap in our face. And their real response was to cut back oral communications time so that we couldn't talk at the mic for the period of time we'd been talking at before. So it was really, it's grotesque when cities use the forms and appearances of democratic and due process to, in essence, disenfranchise people. They tell you, oh, all you have to do is go to city council, that's democratic process. But as many of us know, on the right and on the left, there ain't no democratic process in terms of city council. For some of us on some issues. Looks like Brian wants to get a word in here.
I kind of would like to do, I know Robert has more historical information about the history of the camping ban, but it was my understanding that it actually started off because people from San Jose would come in on the weekends and party down on the beach. You know, these were, you know, middle class people, and the people that lived along the beach, you know, were upset about that. And so that's how it started off, but it like seems to have evolved into this anti-homeless thing, and is that about right?
Well, it is true. The original emergency law passed in 1976 stemmed from a 4th of July weekend at Lighthouse Field at that time, according to our researcher, Marathon Mark Webster, who brought that information to me about 6 months ago. Then the law was finalized in 1978. Initially, I think it had only to do with the beaches. They were barring people from sleeping on the beaches after a nasty weekend that they had there. But then they combined this law with another to make the most draconian anti-homeless law in the state, which made it illegal to sleep anywhere after 11 o'clock at night outside of a house. Or domicile, actually. So you sleep in a restaurant, you're illegal. You sleep in a vehicle on your own property, you're illegal. Yes, George.
Yeah, let's sympathize with the American public for a minute. Mm-hmm. The American dream has one vision, and it's the epitome of the American dream, or the vision of the American dream, is the white picket fence with the house. That's unattainable for a good majority of the citizens. To own their own home, you used to be able to work in a factory, save your money, and buy a house. Now, if you own the factory, if the factory is still open, you could buy your house. So the dream is gone. And so people go into denial about that. And they don't want to see other examples of this dead dream. And another example is the poverty among us. We don't want to see beggars on the streets. It reminds us that this system is not working. I'm not a socialist. I think they're silly. I'm not a capitalist. I think they're silly. Maybe I'm an anarchist. I don't know. But whatever it is, I can't deny the poverty that's in the country. I can't deny the suffering that's in the country. It bothers me. If I could deny it, maybe I wouldn't be as bothered. They told me if you take acid, you're going to regret it because you'll become so aware of what's around you. You'll change friends. Well, unfortunately, I took acid. Now I'm frustrated by it, but it's better than being in denial. And I think that's probably the main thing we have to work on is just denial. And maybe through humor, we can break this down, this denial.
So listen, all you humorists out there and out-of-work drama students and UC clown about. So the summer's coming up. We need your thoughts. We need your costumes. We need your input. All you Shakespearean actors who want to do more than simply make a dime for the summer and go to graduate school or whatever you're doing, give us a call at 423-HUFF. That's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Maybe we'll cook up some more theatrical stuff that concerns the rights of people in a broader way. And the rest of you folks, come on, we have a call in line here. You know, we're really aching to hear from you. You got an open line at 427-3772. Here's your chance to tell us off. Tell us what idiots we really are, or let us know what great intelligent speakers we are, or let us know that we're not talking about the stuff you want to talk about. Give us a call at 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. I think another, here's old backyard Brian got more to say.
Just like George was saying, you know, let's look at it from the, as you know, give the American citizen the benefit of the doubt. I was speaking with Tom Motti, who won a landmark camping case in 1977 at Scotts Creek Beach. And one possible analysis of the political scene is there was a fairly conservative city council back then, and the progressives were able to actually to move in and to gain control finally, and some of the politicians that the progressive politicians they were in fairly serious danger of being recalled by the conservatives. They were recalled, but then they got back in somehow. But one possible analysis is that when the progressives are trying to change certain things, they got a certain number of things on their agenda,